Hey, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is not Fish and Frank. As you can tell, it's radio, but I am still more handsome than he will ever be. We've got some great guests here today. We've got Robert, a regular.
Yes.
We got Barry, who is the host of Barry's Fishing World.
Tarpon World, yeah.
Tarpon World, yes. Yeah. But, well, you know, fish, close, tarpon, whatever.
Barry's World, whatever.
Yeah, which, world, at least it's a world. Yes.
Wayne's World, whatever, yeah.
Yes, and we have a special guest. We have Alex. And she is an employee of Fish and Frank, so, you know, we feel bad for her for that. But
the cool part, though, is that, you know, she's one of the newest members, but she's so new to fishing that she brings a whole new aspect to things around the shop. And Frank's not a big fan of hiring, like, people that are very much know-it-alls about fishing. He prefers everyone to learn it and morph into their own specialty. He likes them to have a fishing background, but not like a captain, for example, where they know everything or something like that. So with her there, she brings in a nice little spin to things by asking some of the questions, because I've been doing it for so long, you know, 21 years, that, you know, it's like I've talked about this a few different times. When you talk to customers, you get so attuned to teaching them one specific thing. Like if they come in asking about a specific fish, I've done it so much, I'll go to step A, step B, overlook C, and go to D. Even though C was a minor detail, it's still a huge detail that needs to be there, but sometimes I assume or just flat out forget. And having other people around, but especially new people that don't know all that stuff, ask those questions and re-enlighten you of, hey, you need to pay attention to A, B, C, and D. And it's kind of cool that way.
That's definitely what Alex brings to the table. We even recorded a show yesterday for Barry's Tarpon World, and in that episode, Alex asked a question, and Robert got stumped. He had no idea. Wow. She asked such a great question that I've never seen him with a confused, puzzled face on his look like that ever in my life.
What was the question, Alex? What did you ask him?
Is it just the male black drum that drums, or is it both the male and female that drum?
And I wasn't 100% sure of the answer.
Wow.
Couldn't tell you. I can tell you right now, but I couldn't tell you yesterday.
Oh, well, and so what's the answer?
Males only.
Males only, okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like beating on their chest to attract
females. Yeah, so it's a breeding thing.
Yeah, basically similar to like what frogs do and other species do, but it definitely stumped me, so it was pretty awesome. You know, and speaking of that, you know, black drum is kind of one of the fish of this week on our list of fish that are doing really well out there. You know, all this black water's got so many people struggling with catching fish that, you know, the one fish that has been cooperating has been the black drum, and they're catching them at a lot of different places. I mean, I know Barry's been catching some, Alex has been catching some. But, you know, these are 30 to 50-pound fish.
On average, yeah. Average, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know where you've been catching them, Barry, but
I mean,
I'll let you guys jump in here and give some spots and how you've been doing it with the black drum.
All right. Well, now that we're approaching, like, these new moon tides, as we discussed in yesterday's episode, there's a lot of crabs being flushed in the harbor right now, and not just crabs, but shrimps. So that's like black drum's favorite food is crustaceans. So with that being said, they're heavily feeding right now, and they're at places where these crabs and shrimp get flushed through. And that's at canal mouths like Punta Gorda Isles. I'm sure it's happening on the Port Charlotte side as well.
And it's definitely happening more over there on the PGI side, though.
Yeah, that's mainly where I fish. And I mean, I'm catching them on, you can even catch them on artificial, which is not what you originally or most commonly think of when you're targeting the black drum. So anything from, I've caught them on half-ounce rattle traps to shrimp imitations like a DOA shrimp to a voodoo shrimp. That's working well, but it's very difficult to beat half a crab, half a blue crab on the bottom with a jig head or a split shot or an egg weight. They will come and find it in this dark water. So that's doing very well for them, and they're also at the 41 Bridge.
Yeah, and Alex, you were fishing there the other day with Carl.
I was. We were using half blue crab on jig heads and doing really well. The black drum bite has been good most places right now.
Yeah, I mean, the three most popular spots right now where they're doing really good actually is El Jobin at the railroad trestle there. The bridge going over the Myakka River obviously is doing well because they're right next to each other. And then you got the Punta Gorda Isles and the 41 Bridge down there going between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. So, you know, it's one of those really cool spots. And with it being a holiday weekend, you know, we've got some funky weather coming potentially. But if it doesn't come here and the weather turns out to be really nice, but you don't want to venture too far with your family because you're worried about weekend warriors, but you still want them to have a great time, Black Drum are just an amazing battler, and to catch something that's in that 30 to 50 pound range is just, it's pretty hard to beat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and speaking of it being a holiday weekend, you know, the one thing that's come up quite a few times is, and you've probably seen this on the news or whatever, you know, snook season opens on, what, Monday?
Yeah, the 1st of September. The 1st of September. And all the whole state except for a select area, which...
Right.
Can you tell us where that is, Robert?
Well, I mean, have you seen it on the news, RJ?
I haven't seen it yet, no. I just knew the season was opening, yeah.
Well, on the news, basically they're reading what the FWSC has put out for their media page, and they're just reading it verbatim. But the way they're reading it off comes off very, very confusing. Snook season does open statewide September 1st. Except for from, I believe it's Pinellas County to the Collier County border. So basically the entire west coast of Florida is closed for snook season. But they're not really specifying that. You know, they're
saying from one county to another, right?
Yeah, they're not really saying it. You know, they're saying it's from one county to the other, but that's all of Sarasota County, all of Charlotte County, and all of Lee County. All that is closed to any harvest of snook.
Right, and I'm sure that's a reaction to where the heaviest of the red tide was this past year. That's going to be the rationale for doing that.
Yeah,
100%.
Exactly. You know, and people are saying, well, you know, because they made the emergency closure for snook, redfish, and trout last year, and they said they're going to reevaluate it next May, and May of 2020. And some people are still asking us the question, well, does that mean snook's going to open next May? And it's like, doesn't mean any of these fish are going to open next May. This is just when they make the decision whether they'll reopen it or not. And even if they do agree to open up snook in May, or if they agree with their meeting to say that we are going to open it, it still wouldn't open until September 1st of 2020. So people just need to kind of really be aware of that and not get too confused and get in trouble, because there's going to be some serious confusion going on. And if you go to the other coast, you're okay.
So what's the fine for harvesting a snook when you're not supposed to?
Honestly, I don't know, because I've heard so many different fines involved from different FWC officers over the years. But, I mean, you're probably looking at a minimum of $500 by the time you pay your court costs and everything else.
They don't seize your license?
It depends on the officer, and it depends on how bad your infraction is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they can do anything they pretty much want if they have to, but...
Put it in perspective, $500, if that's the minimum, that's like two beautiful inshore rod setups.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a really nice fishing rod.
Right. Yeah, that puts it in really good perspective as to why you don't need a couple of snook in the well.
Yeah.
So. You know, it's one of those things that people need to be aware of. And that this time of year, snook are very easy to catch. You know, that's one of the things that I want people to be aware of with what's going on with the regulations. But, you know, they're catching some really nice big snook right now in quite a few different locations. You know, that's up here in Venice, up at the jetties, has been incredible at night. I mean, there's been some 40, 44-inch snook being caught up there on bucktails, especially the flare hawk, which is a lure that's been around for 40, 50 years, but has gained new popularity again.
Right. What would you say are good colors, Robert, to throw for those flare hawks in the passes? What would be like a staple, like, you need to have this in the box?
The white with the dark green tail on it, or the white with the red tail on it.
What size, what ounces would you prefer?
Yeah, that's going to vary depending on your tide, you know, because some of those passes, especially with this full moon hill tide, and when we talk about, like, these extreme tides, you know, today it's actually going from a 2.5 tide today for a high, and 8 hours later it's going to a zero. So we're going to lose 2.5 feet of water in 8 hours versus an average tide is about a foot. So we got a really strong spike in a tide for the next 2 days that I'm aware of.
Yeah, we have a 2.5 foot drop today.
Yeah.
Just today alone. So,
and then incoming tonight is going from whatever, 6:30 or 8? No, 10:30 tonight.
It's actually, well, yeah, at 11 o'clock tonight, it says 10:59. It's going from a 0.0, and then the high tide is going to be, let's see, tomorrow morning at 5:09 a.m. at a 1.5. So it's going to another 1.5.
A decent tide.
Yeah. Right. What happens in those drops as far as the rivers are concerned, you know, we're talking about there's a certain amount of water coming down through the river, but velocity increases considerably when you get that much of a tidal drop.
Right.
And what that velocity means is a lot more bait fish, crab, shrimp, and things like that are going to be flushed out into deeper water.
Exactly.
So you look for a much bigger feed for the predator fish because of those tide drops. So
right.
That's something definitely to take advantage of.
Should be a really good weekend of fishing, even though we still have, like, a possible hurricane or tropical, well, depending on where it lands, but even though we have a bad weather system coming through.
Yeah, but that's something worth mentioning, too, because, I mean, hurricanes always affect everybody in the state of Florida in some way, shape, or form, and especially if you've gone through one with a very... either if it's a very near miss or an actual direct hit, it affects everybody, you know, and I don't wish it to hit anyone at all, but I don't want it to hit me.
Yeah.
You know, I've been through it before and it sucks.
Yeah.
Well, the 11 o'clock discussion today from the National Hurricane Center, the new one comes out at 2 o'clock, so we're going to go check on that.
And that's going to be the Euro model, right?
Yeah, that'll be the Euro model at 2. But
personally,
what they're saying is it looks like it's going to cross the state between, it's going to come in around Melbourne, it's going to cross the state between Orlando and Tampa, and that seems to be the track.
Mm-hmm.
And it all depends on how big it is when it gets to the East Coast as to how it's going to affect us here, because it's going to drop rapidly in speed. It's a small compact storm, so it'll break up pretty quick once it hits land. So we shouldn't get it so bad on this side. We'll get wind and rain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But when you're talking about boating, and you're an amateur.
Don't be on the water.
Monday is not the time to be out on the water. It's not a time to paddleboard. It's not a time to kayak. It's not a time to take a small boat out, because all kinds of things happening, because the winds are coming from places that they don't normally come from.
And they shift direction in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat, they shift direction, and the currents are going to change and everything else. So it's not a good time to be out on the water unless you absolutely know what you're doing. And if you absolutely know what you're doing, you're not going to be out on the water anyway.
Right.
So Monday's not a great boating day from what we can see from the weather.
That's a really good public service announcement there.
You know, there is one cool part about, though, with Charlotte Harbor in our area in general, is that we've got a lot of canal systems, though, that you can actually get into that are, almost all of them are in very close proximity to a boat ramp.
Yes.
So a lot of times you don't have to cross the open harbor at all and just launch and then go right up into some of these canals and go fishing, like Punta Gorda. You've got Lashley Park and Ponce de Leon Park, and both of those, well, Ponce is probably your best one because you just turn left and go right up into the canal.
Mm-hmm.
Lashley, you'd have to come around just a little bit by the bridges and then go into the canal system. But you have El Jobin, you can fish right there and sneak up the river a little bit, where it's definitely much more narrower, more confined, a little bit safer, but just be aware of things that are going on. You know, but, you know, this is all hypothetical, but the one thing that is definitely a huge bonus to when these tropical storms come through, and, you know, we're kind of discussing it a little bit on the way here with that barometric pressure change.
Yeah, when it drops specifically.
Yeah.
Changing as in it drops. Obviously, that's that intensifies a tropical depression, but that really does, in a weird way, turn on the fish big time, especially snook. I've had some ridiculous experiences in the past with even just tropical depressions coming up the coast, and we're
50 to 150 miles offshore.
Yeah,
and it still affects how great the fishing can be here.
Yeah, so that's one thing to consider. Be safe, but there, crazy stuff does happen during these times of tropical depressions, or in this case, a hurricane. Is this something new for you, Alex? This a hurricane?
It is.
You're from where? Where are you from originally?
I'm from Ohio. I talked to my mom last night. She said, we think you should fly home.
Back home? Why did you move down to Florida, right?
Yes, to experience the summer and see if I could handle the hurricane season.
I think this is going to be a true testament. Is it worth staying down for the fishing with the hurricanes or not? Well, I guess we'll know by next week, right?
You make it seem like it is.
Yeah. Well, and it is. And, you know, there's a lot of really cool things to experience. And, you know, going through a mild hurricane or at least a near miss is always interesting. It gives you a feel for what's going to happen. But, you know, most of the time it's the anticipation of the fate is a lot worse than the fate itself.
Yeah.
You know, so
everyone's going to be glued on their TVs the next two, 3 days.
Yeah.
All these updates. And
But the fishing, you know, and you're talking about the barometric pressure, you know, dropping. You know, one really cool fact is that when, you know, I'm lucky enough where I get to talk to a lot of marine biologists, and it tickles my brain to challenge me and learn a lot of different stuff. But when Hurricane Charlie hit,
oh man, yeah,
all the fish in the harbor, a lot of fish, not all of them, but a massive amount of fish left Charlotte Harbor. They actually were making noises, pinging, you know, they put acoustic tags, uh-huh. And they've got these submerged sounding stations throughout all of Charlotte Harbor, the Myakka River, Peace River, near shore reefs, up and down the intercoastal that all these biologists utilize for their tagged fish that they're doing research on. And just within a couple hours of Hurricane Charlie actually hitting Charlotte Harbor, sharks were leaving in massive numbers, redfish, snook, trout, and some of the Goliath grouper that had all been tagged were going from El Jobin, 41 Bridge, and making it out through Boca Grande Pass and kept going.
Wow.
You know,
what?
And there was all sorts of chatter on every one of these machines just pinging off. One redfish was from, I believe, the 41 Bridge. 2.5 hours later was going through the pass.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing information.
You know, so some of these.
So I should flee as well.
If the fish start running.
if you start hearing pingings, that means we know. It's like the birds. Birds like do the same thing. It's like
all animals do. We do too. We just gave up looking at that a long time ago.
Right, and a lot of that is barometric pressure. The average barometric pressure in this area is about 1,100 millibars.
Yeah.
It's kind of the in between high pressure, low pressure systems. Charlie was in the 800 range,
yep.
And so there was a massive drop in pressure. And if you're a fish, if you're 30 feet and above in the water, you're going to feel the difference. After 30 feet, the second atmosphere, there's almost no change underwater that's perceptive.
Mm.
So shallow places like Charlotte Harbor, where you're 5 to 10 feet deep, they're going to feel that change pretty quick. And that's what gets them to move. When there's a massive change in air pressure, they're either going to get really hungry or they're going to say, I'm getting out of here. And that's what they did when Charlie came through because it was such a drop. This storm system right now is in the 980 millibar range. And that's pretty much as low as it's going to get. So it's still a big difference as far as a fish is concerned or as
Absolutely.
Far as birds are concerned or yeah. as far as reptiles is concerned. But like you said, we humans, we forgot to look at that. Even though we have all this technology to measure things to the hundredth of a millibar.
Yeah.
We've just given up a lot of our little instincts, right, yeah. you know. Why do I have a headache today?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
it might be the pressure change or, you know, there's subtle little things that we try to blame it on other things that are more tangible and physical. It's hard to pinpoint something that you can't see.
Like our intuition or something
yeah,
like that, yeah.
Exactly. So
if you think about it too, the Seminole and the Colusa before them and the Timucan, some of the tribes that lived on the shores here, they dealt with hurricanes all the time.
Yeah.
And they knew what to do long before they saw something in the distance. And a lot of that had to do with the changes, number one, in pressure. And what were all the animals doing? Yeah. And because they were so in tune to that nature, when they saw something different, they knew they had to take the appropriate precautions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say an example, RJ, was the hurricane that went up the Gulf Coast last fall and it hit Mexico Beach. I believe that was Hurricane Michael, right?
Michael, yes.
When that, for this is an example, when that hurricane was literally parallel to our coast on the West Coast, it was overnight. It was like, it happened between 8 and 10 at night. I was fishing that night because I knew the barometric pressure was dropping that evening. I had three rods out and all with chunks of mullet. And I remember, like, I had three friends with me at the time, so it's not just like I could bring them in if we need some eyewitness
character witnesses.
Yeah, it's not, this is not a fish story. I have pictures and everything. It was night, and I remember you could see the bands. It was pretty cool at night. You could see the outer band of Hurricane Michael, like, over us. It was coming over Charlotte County. And when one of the bands passed over us and it drizzled rain, all three rods went off. I am not, in like a 2 minute span, and there was 2 5-foot bull sharks on two of the rods, and the third one had a 42 and a half inch snook on it. So, and we caught all that within 5 minutes, and we were fishing for like an hour or two before that. And then it seemed like once that band went over, I don't know if it had to do with it dropped the pressure just enough, it just turned the bite on, and that was an epic night. And that's all the only baits we had, so I didn't continue fishing. But that's not the only instance of barometric pressure changes affecting or improving a bite for fishing. So
yeah, I mean, almost every time prefrontal conditions,
that too,
when we get fishing is absolutely amazing. And then once the front actually passes past you, fishing slows down immensely.
Exactly.
So
yeah, it's another way to think of it, a weather pattern, like a cold front.
It is. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of things going on with, you know, we talked about all the fresh water last week. We talked about the river height and stuff with Frank. But this week people are still going, getting frustrated with trying to find a lot of different fish with all this, you know, fresh water pouring out of the rivers. And last week the tarpon did a disappearing act. You know, they just flat out were gone throughout the whole harbor. But they actually finally started to just show back up in the last 2 days. There has been some fish in the 20-foot holes as of yesterday. There's also been a couple of fish starting to show up in the lower Myakka River. There's a ton of juveniles. If you're really, really, if you really know the Myakka River right now, going up above Snook Haven right now, there's quite a few juvenile tarpon in that 10 to 30 pound range. And guys are catching some nice snook and bass up there at the same time.
Yeah, over the years in that Snook Haven area, when they used to rent the canoes, I've caught many a tarpon on that bit of the river. And the river's not all that wide there.
No, it gets real nice.
So it's surprising when you pull a 30-pound fish out of that narrow river.
Yeah.
What did you like to throw back in the day for them, RJ?
Mullet.
Oh, just a live mullet?
Yeah, just toss a mullet out. And the other thing I always did really well with was any of the Miro lures. They seem to work real well in that murky water up there.
What color? Was there a certain color you liked?
Greenback with the silver sides, with the mirrored sides. Those
so natural color,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, those juvenile tarpon are pretty impressive up there. But the
in fact, the only tarpon I ever caught on a fly rod, I caught up just north of Snook Haven.
Nice.
And
nice.
That would have been a bucktail. We'd be using a bucktail.
And they're beautiful. I mean, the this time of year, those fish that are up there in that river are really golden color.
Yes.
You know, they get that real dark stain to them, so they're completely different looking. It's pretty impressive to see.
Yeah, if you've only caught a fish in the river and not caught one out on the bay, they're completely different in color. You say, why do you call it the Silver King? It's gold up here.
Yeah, black backs, black eyes with a gold tint on their sides. That's yes. It's a
yeah,
pretty nice.
It looks totally gorgeous, different. Gorgeous. It's pretty awesome to see a full-blown river fish.
Yeah.
It's like that snook we have in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
That's a river snook.
Okay.
That's why he is so dark in color. You know, you catch that same fish out of Boca Grande, just as silver as can be with yellow fins.
Yeah.
So why do we think the tarpon left? Is that a salinity problem?
I don't know what it was.
Because
you know,
it's not food. There's plenty of food in the harbor.
Yeah, they usually don't leave to that extreme. You know, they'll actually move to like the pass and jump right out to the beaches. But within a couple of days, they're right back into the harbor. But these fish were gone for, what, 7 days?
Yeah, I heard nothing. Yeah, solid 5 days,
ghost 100%. Ghost town. You know, and Frank, I think, was probably right that the fish went out 15, 20, 30 miles offshore for a little bit, you know, because there was too many people running all over the place looking for those fish to not see them. But, you know, one of the first spots they started to show back up at was a little Gasparilla Pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and intercoastal, right?
And the intercoastal right there between Gasparilla Pass and Boca Grande. And there's still a lot of fish there right now. So if the upper harbor isn't really necessarily your taste, or you happen to live out in the Inglewood or Rotunda area, from Stump Pass all the way down through Boca Grande Pass along the intercoastal, in particular from the Placida Causeway there out to Boca Grande, there is a lot of tarpon there right now. And they're varying in sizes from 20 pounds to 130 pounds. One of my buddies is out there right now, actually. And, I mean, he lost a rod. I got that part out of him. And I think he was 2 for 3 fish, but he lost a rod, so the fish won.
Jeez.
Yeah, he wasn't real happy.
So I got a question for you, Robert. Now that we're past, like, the major, like, on the beaches right now, if you find them out in those areas, the intercoastal waterway, not necessarily in the harbor, but would you still throw crabs at them, even though May and June are the peak months when they're primarily feeding on them? Or, like, what would you recommend?
Well, I think crabs are going to work just because of the flush that's going on right now. All the blue crabs are actually spawning, so they're all heading out through the passes with this fresh water mostly, but also the full moon, you know, is causing them to go offshore. So I think they're going to be focused a little bit on a crab feed, but I don't know if it would be my first choice. My first choice is probably going to still be a ladyfish. Mm-hmm. Or a bait buster or a thread fin, some type of bait fish.
Gotcha.
You know, but I'm not going to hesitate to not have a crab out there or to throw a crab at them.
Yeah, but that's not your number one choice.
No, I just, over 20 years of trying to fish and catch as many as I can with them, I've never heard of anyone going, you absolutely positively need to have crabs right now when this is going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's not consistent at all.
Yeah, okay. I feel like Alex right here is, once her arm is recovered from all the black drum she caught 2 days ago, that's the next fish on your bucket list.
I'm actually excited to get a juvenile. I've already gotten my big, big tarpon. I'd like to play with the smaller ones now.
Yeah. How did you catch your big one?
We were on the beach at Boca, 4th Street, kayaked out a chunk of mullet, and had two on, and one got one to shore, and it was taller than I was. I am.
And it was about
6 foot long. Really, really exciting night. And had been down here for maybe 2 months.
And you already got your big tarpon.
And I already got my big tarpon.
Wow.
Yeah, the quality of the fish that you've caught just in the short period of time that you've been here is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I've been really lucky.
Look at that compliment from Robert. Wow, that's saying something.
You've got several big snook.
Yeah.
You know, along with now you got black drum under your belt, and you've gotten obviously the tarpon. You know, that's saying something for one, your persistence and your passion and some luck, you know, but being persistent at it and trying and learning and everything else helps a lot.
I even managed to barehand a blue runner out of the Gulf. Pretty cool experience.
Runner. Now that would be an interesting thing. You got video of it?
No.
Then it didn't happen. But no, that's still
pretty
awesome.
I wouldn't believe me either.
That's pretty awesome. No, it's very, very possible. Yeah, you obviously did it, so I can't deny that. You know, so that's pretty good stuff.
Hey, RJ, I've got a question for you, a serious one. What's the most popular fish in the ocean?
Most popular fish in the ocean?
Yeah, most popular.
What do you mean? For catching or for eating?
Don't overthink it, Robert. Just, what's the most popular fish in the ocean?
Wow, that's a tough one. I can name about 4 or 5 that I like.
Is this a joke?
Yeah, there's a joke there, I think.
Do I ever ask serious? I always ask serious questions. Come on. There was the hint right there.
Yeah, he pulled me off on that. I have no idea. Tell us.
It's a starfish. Boom!
There. Wow. Man, we're going to do something different about this.
take his phone away from
him. Shut my mic down.
Right, that's a far reach there.
to go back to juvenile tarpon.
Okay.
So, the Myakka River. Mm-hmm. Where else?
You got the Myakka River, and then you've got from the I-75 on the Peace River all the way up to right now, honestly, the 761 bridge.
Wow.
So basically all the way up to Lettuce Lake. Mm-hmm. You know, the and believe it or not, a lot of times there's actually a lot of juveniles heading up towards Shell Creek, mm-hmm. but that river or the Shell Creek is cranking so much fresh water over there right now, and the tides have been so high, most people can't even get underneath the trestle right now with a regular boat, let alone if you got a T-top or a bimini top that you can't fold down, mm-hmm. you're not getting under that trestle.
Yeah.
And that it's been cranking so hard through there that it's flushed pretty much everything out of there, so the fish have actually migrated up more on the Harbor Heights side, going up past the water treatment plant and all through that section.
So, Alex, do you have a plan to catch these juveniles?
I don't.
She's winging it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the best thing to do for the juvenile tarpon, like, I mean, tarpon are very terrifying to catch anyway to begin with. I mean, they will challenge some of the best anglers, period, because they will change their minds instantly and go to a completely different feed, move to a completely different location from hour to hour, but especially from day to day. So it makes them an extremely challenging fish, let alone on a fly rod, RJ.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
That's right. An accomplishment, whether it's a 10-pound fish or a 110-pound fish. That's still an awesome accomplishment. But when you take juvenile tarpon and move them into a canal or into the rivers, I think you just made the challenge probably at least five times harder than if you were fishing for adult tarpon out in the harbor, Boca Grande, or along the beaches.
Why would you say that?
I don't know, because they are just more finicky.
It seems like sometimes they just like to, they're hanging out. They're enjoying rolling, having a good time. They're just like youngsters hanging out, and they're not really...
It's basically like kindergartners on recess.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
They're not interested in anything else going on around them other than just having fun.
Right, and they're rolling all around you, and it can be very frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, the most success you're going to have, though, on the river for juvenile tarpon or even up in the canals for juvenile tarpon is most of the time it's going to be smaller baits. You know, a 3-inch paddle tail or smaller. Like the DOA Tiny Terror Eyes is an unbelievably great canal tarpon and river tarpon lure.
That itty bitty tiny one? Not the medium size?
No,
like the itty bitty
tiny one.
Wow, okay.
The one that you would normally think you'd use for like almost
panfish.
Bluegill or crappie.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a bit from people that have been successful with the juveniles, is the smaller the bait, almost to a point, the smaller the bait, the better, because that's what they're finding up there to eat. They're eating much smaller things than you normally would think a tarpon would pick up.
Right, you would think a 30-pound fish, like what you've caught up, you know, up in Snookhaven, would eat easily like a 5-inch bait, which they can.
Which they can, but they're not interested in anything.
Not at all.
You're kind of matching the hatch, because even you said earlier, you know, you got these shrimp that are being washed down, but not only are those like saltwater shrimp that are being flushed out of the rivers, but there's a lot of freshwater shrimp that are being pushed down out of those rivers. And with all this flow going on out of the Myakka River, because last week it was just barely above flood stage, the Peace River was still a couple feet above flood stage, but dropping. That's still a lot of water volume pushing out tadpoles, weak swimming fish, basically. Yeah. So your tadpoles, your small shrimp, some of your different varieties of catfish, especially like your armored mm-hmm. catfish that are a non-native invasive species, your gar, all those are being pushed
tilapia.
Out of all these. Yeah, tilapia, Mayan cichlids.
Yeah.
You know, those are all being moved around and flushed out of those rivers, but all that little stuff is usually a weaker swimmer anyway. So those fish really focus on that smaller stuff because there's usually more numbers of that.
And also it's not as difficult to chase for the tarpon.
Right.
Chasing down a Mayan cichlid is a chore. I mean, those are fast-swimming fish, and they make real sharp turns and things like that. And for the tarpon, they're going to be opportunistic in something that's just kind of trapped in the water stream. That's much easier to get and eat.
Right. It's like if you think about them just having fun, the kids at recess, they don't want to devote their time to stalking something and hunting it down. If something just easy comes by, why not just grab it? No big deal. Not exert my their energy on it and just keep going and rolling around and having fun. So
right, and with a fly rod, you're probably going to use something like a semi-sinking line. You wouldn't want to use a surface line and a floating line. And you're just going to kind of let it drift. I mean, it's like, gee, I'm not doing much work here. I got it out there, and I'm just going to let it go by me, and you're going to bring your line up as it goes by. But that's what the tarpon's looking for, yes. Some critter that's caught in the stream yeah. that they can come over and grab.
If right. you can, with the tarpon, with artificial especially, if you can calm your nerves,
yes,
it's with fish rolling all around, doesn't matter if they're 10 to 150 pounds, you will hook up. If you get so amped up, it's so hard to like retrieve slowly, but that's what they want. But that's the biggest, I think, the hardest thing for people, even myself, when I first targeted them on artificial, you have got to like calm your nerves and stop twitching and doing all like the erratic behavior because they don't want it like that.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it's a slow, steady retrieve?
That's it.
Most of the time, yeah.
Yeah. Slow, steady, slow retrieve.
There's no hard set rules in fishing, but that's like...
That seems
very
one
optimal.
Of the best.
Yeah. One of the more consistent ways to do it.
So optimal.
That's the other reason why a rattle trap works so unbelievably well for these juvenile tarpon. You throw that quarter ounce or eighth ounce rattle trap up there, and you do the sinking one because you're fishing in anywhere from 6 to 15 feet of water, depending on where those fish are at on the river. Let it sink down real slow and just do a nice, easy, slow to moderate retrieve back, and they're crushing that too. And you were talking about your slow sinking line on a fly line. Probably the best fly to put on that is a clouser mm-hmm. minnow.
Yeah.
You know, clouser minnow's small. It's got a little... steel eyeball on the front, so it gives it just a little bit of weight, so it's going to sink down naturally and slow, but not so slow where it's suspended in the water column, so you can change up your depths to get it, figure out where those fish might want to hit at.
Right. And like in solid white, for some reason that's worked very well
yeah.
for me. A clouser in white, small, that works really well. Even though you're in dark water, that's produced quite a bit.
I think what happens with the white, and talking as a diver now, when you see white underwater, it takes on the color of the surrounding water. So it's not white when you see it underwater. It's tan in water. It's going to look brown.
Yeah.
If you're out in clearer blue water, it still takes on a blue tint to yeah. it. So white is kind of like the chameleon of fishing.
That's a really good way to mm-hmm. put that.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what color to use, put white on, because the water is going to give it the color that is the natural color of everything around it. So.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is, we were talking about that with white being one of those colors that works year-round in clear water or dark water.
Mm-hmm.
When white is working, there's no other color that will touch it. But another color that's amazing to use this time of year for, it doesn't matter what it is, but in this dark water, is pink. Pink or nuclear chicken are probably two of the best oddball colors to use in these dark waters because, an electric chicken, the best way to describe electric chicken or nuclear chicken is it's pink back with a chartreuse belly or chartreuse back with a pink belly, depending on how you want to look at it. It's a really, really ugly combination.
Yeah.
But
one that doesn't catch a lot of fishermen when they see it.
No, not at all. But in dark water, whether it's a hard bait or a soft bait, that color pattern is absolutely pretty devastating to fish because normally in dark tan and water, you're sticking with, your root beers, your golds, motor oils,
blacks.
Watermelon, black, grape, basically all of your darkest colors in dark water. Because you said that the fish take on the stain of the water, so it's actually a more natural color for fish to observe and feel more comfortable eating. But that pink can be really unbelievably effective.
And another name for the pink, for like, especially for bass fishermen, is bubblegum.
Yeah.
It's that bubblegum. It's like a bright fluorescent pink. It's like a pearl pink.
Yeah, they don't want to admit that it's pink, so they'll use bubblegum for the...
Right, yeah, yeah. Like
some of the companies on the package, it won't say like pink pearl. It'll say bubblegum.
Hmm.
One company used to have one that was bubblegum, and then they had one that they had silver glitter in it, and they called it bubblegum ice. But they wouldn't call it pink with silver
pink glitter.
Pink
glitter, yeah. Hey, Robert, what color are you throwing today on the boat? I'm just going to get out my pink glitter,
just
throw it around.
it's just kind of hilarious how it has to be masculine for some reason, and it's just there's no reason for it. Yeah. You know, try those colors. You know, try something out of the ordinary and go against the grain, because the fish definitely don't know the same rules we know. But
what the fish do know is if it doesn't look natural to them, with the exception maybe of bass, of black bass, because those buggers will hit anything that moves. If it wiggles, moves, they're going to eat it. But most other fish, if it doesn't look natural to them or if it's not behaving naturally, they're not going to hit it. And a lot of times when you see a fish following your lure and they follow it up the boat and then they leave, they were curious about it, but it didn't trigger, I want to eat this response, because it didn't look natural to them. And color has a lot to do with that also. If you're going to throw something that doesn't blend in, like nuclear chicken may work in one place and it's going to be horrendous in another water condition. And that's because in that other water condition, it just didn't look natural. So that's kind of how you're matching your colors, not just on fish are going to hit a certain color. They're going to hit a certain color in a certain type of water, a certain type of light condition. It's going to look natural to them. If it doesn't look natural, they're not going to hit it.
Right. You know, another huge part of fishing, you know, this time of year, whether it's the freshwater or the rivers or canals in the salt water, quote unquote, smell, you know, scents are like a huge, huge thing for the fish right now too. So
scent and sound, because their visual is impaired at the moment.
Right.
With the dirty of the how dirty the water is.
Yeah, because normally fish are sight, sound, then smell, but right now it's smell, sound, then sight.
It's reversed. Yeah,
it's all, you know, slightly flip-flopped around. So one of your best bets for catching the fish out there is, you know, a lot of your soft plastics, some of the companies have a scent already infused into them, but there's also some added scent attractants out there that you can put on your lures, whether it's a soft bait or a hard bait. But even adding a scent to already a scent enhanced bait might help you a lot. You know, you've got the DOA, actually the DOA paddle tails actually have like a little bit of ground up fish mixed into the plastics that you won't be able to smell, but the fish will be able to detect. And their shrimp has ground up shrimp added to it in their plastics. But
and then on the shrimp or even the bait busters, you can actually insert their rattle beads to add to sound with the scent, right?
Correct.
So there you can have the best of both worlds in those lures.
Well, you can actually have the best of all three worlds if you want, because you can actually add those rattle chambers into any soft plastic, because it's actually a pointed, some of them are a pointed little glass tube that you can force into the plastic. Mm-hmm. Some of them are a metal tube that you can slide into the plastic. Mm-hmm. But even if it's scent enhanced, like right now with the crabs flushing out right now, it's not going to hurt you by any stretch to actually take a crab scent and add that to your bait just to draw them in. Even though your bait doesn't look like a crab, having that extra scent there of something that they're familiar with that's going on right now may draw them in that much faster to come in and check it out and go, well, smells like a crab, doesn't look like a crab, but they go and try it and they taste it and it's like, well, it still tastes pretty good, so they end up eating it anyway. You know, it's by all means not going to hurt you, because I've never seen an instance where adding a scent to anything has actually made the day worse for fishing.
One of my favorite spray-on scents is WD-40.
Yep.
Because the majority of what's in WD-40 is fish oil. And because the formula is it pushes water away from it, it stays on whatever you spray it on much longer than if you just put an oil on a plastic lure that's going to come off pretty quick. So everybody's got WD-40 in their tackle box, or they should. And as an added thing to whatever you're doing, WD-40 does make a big difference.
I've never tried WD-40. Like, I've heard that a lot.
It's the oldest fish attractant in the world.
Yeah, I use that on a regular basis.
There's legitimately fish. I need to look at the ingredients. Or
it's 90% fish oil.
It used to be. I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, it's pretty close to almost all fish oil.
Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned that it pushes the water away. WD is actually water displacement.
Yes. Yeah, it displaces water away from it. So what that means is whatever you spray it on, it's going to come off a lot slower than if you used a regular spray-on oil. you know, most of the attractants you buy are going to be some type of aerosol oil. Mm. And it just doesn't stay on the lure all that long. Wow. But when you spray WD-40 on it, it'll probably spend a day on that lure.
And the whole day, we like it molds.
And just keep coming off, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So it displaces water but attracts the fish.
Yeah. Well, it's going to leach off. It just doesn't leach off as quickly as an oil spray will, you know, regular fish or other type of oil spray. Because the other ingredients are what keeps it displacing the water.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, you've got that, but there is a couple of other scent formulas out there that work really well. Because most of them are sprays, like you said, they're in an aerosol or a pump bottle that you just squirt on, and 2 to 10 casts later, it's gone. Doesn't matter if it's a hard bait or a soft bait, but you know, Procure is probably one of the best ones out there because it's an actual gel, and you can put it on a hard bait too. And 20, 30, 40 casts later, you've still got a little bit of that sheen on a hard bait or even a gold spoon or a silver spoon. Mm-hmm. You can still see that. It's still got some of that scent enhancement on there.
Yeah, and as far as scent enhancement is concerned, it really does up the game if you're using spoons, because their main thing is just basically flash and vibration. Now you're going to add a scent trail to it, and that makes a big difference because fish are very attracted to spoons. One of the best things to use to catch damn near anything is a silver or a gold spoon.
And a lot of fish follow it. I've had it happen a lot where they follow it to the boat, and sometimes they don't commit. So.
Well, and that not committing has two reasons. One, if you had the scent, it might commit because it might have been the extra piece, or it was moving in such a way that it wasn't natural to the fish.
Yeah.
Or reeling it too fast, or you're jerking the rod, whatever. It's not behaving the way it wants.
Well, and to add to your first statement with that, you know, the smell was there or whatever, and that kept them kind of coming at them. How many people have been fishing with an artificial lure of some kind, retrieve it, fish follows it and turns away? You know, the scent enhancement, we're doing it to draw the fish in. We're also trying to simulate maybe the food source that they have available to them at that moment, but they're really the number one most important reason why you add scent to any lure or bait is to get rid of our smell, to hide our scent. Human smell.
Just like a hunter.
If we smelled good or tasted good, more things would eat us. Huh. You know, so you ate a hamburger on your way.
Is that why the sharks let go after they bite you once?
Yeah, most of the time. You know, we don't taste like a seal. We don't taste like a mullet, so they just let us go. You know, but you ate a cheeseburger on your way to your fishing spot, or you stopped and got gas, just a little tiny splash, or you're like me and you're an idiot and you smoke. You got a little bit of nicotine on your fingers.
Or you can even add sunscreen.
Sunscreen, sunblock.
You know, sunscreen is a great way to drive fish away.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Whatever's to kill all your
sunscreen,
bait.
If you drop a bottle of sunscreen over the side, you're not catching fish in that spot for a long time.
Exactly.
So, you know, whatever's in sunscreen, you know, be careful. Keep it off your hands, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So any of those things can get transferred onto, your fishing line or onto your lure. You know, even using your saliva to tighten that knot with, what did you drink?
Chapstick.
You think fish are attracted to Red Bull? You know, they might be, but it might actually scare them away. So it's stuff that we take for granted every day, but having those little scents on there can help immensely with making or breaking that fishing trip.
And in current conditions, we're talking about darker water, right? Faster moving water right now. Scent is going to be your big item. You know, that's going to put you over the top as to whether you're going to catch fish or not catch fish.
And also working it slow.
And working it slow, right.
Because that way they can actually focus on where those scents are at. They can take their time to try to track it down without, if you're moving it too aggressively, too fast, those fish are not going to be wanting to chase after it because, A, it's harder for them to follow that scent when it's moving faster away from them with these stronger currents, but also the fish are lethargic because the water is still warm. That dark water is a solar panel, so it's hot out. The fish are a little bit more lazy. They want that guaranteed meal rather than the, oh man, I should run after that and try to catch that, you know, and they'd rather just take it easy and wait for that guaranteed meal. You know, it makes it a whole lot easier. You know, so it's wishy-washy with the fishing in a lot of aspects, but you know, probably a lot of people get frustrated fishing this dark water, but they don't take advantage of the little things that can make the huge difference, like your sense, fishing it super, super slow or pretty much at a standstill. You know, there's a lot of lures that you can fish virtually at a standstill. You know, gulp has so many enzymes in it that it works on its own as a fish attract it. You can pitch it out there and pretend it's a dead shrimp. And that's the other thing is this time of year, don't make yourself crazy trying to have all sorts of live baits. The fish are wanting that guaranteed meal. Use something that's a lot of scent to it. So use frozen shrimp. Frozen shrimp puts off a lot more scent in the water than a live shrimp does. Cut mullet, cut ladyfish, you know, cut sardines. Put that scent out in the water and peg it there in that one particular spot and let it sit for a little while. Let those fish try to figure out what's going on. And if you're pitching under a dock or you're throwing out underneath mangrove bushes, you should throw that bait in that spot. Let it sit for 2 to 5 minutes and then slowly bring it back out and then cast it back up in that exact same spot again and wait for those fish, because sometimes they're 20 feet up underneath the mangroves, and to find that scent trail and work their way through that maze of roots and everything else to get to those baits, it can be a little while for them to track that down. So
if fishing was just throw something on the end of the line and fling it out there and you'll catch fish, it just wouldn't be any fun.
Right.
And what we're learning, you know, with these shows is there's all kinds of techniques that change with the conditions. So you got to know conditions. You got to know what's the moon doing, what's the sun doing, what's the wind doing, what's going on in the water, what are they eating right now, all the rest of that. And that's what makes fishing exciting. It's not just catching something.
Yeah, it's a challenge of spreading
the challenge of
the
doing
knowledge.
Yeah. Well, which Alex is learning now with all the great new fish species you've been exposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff, you know. So
you can also,
we're going to continue on doing it again and again and again as much as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Last 2 minutes here before we go. Is there any other fish we forgot about that's available right now?
Well, the grouper fishing offshore has been fair to decent, but the weather's going to get really inconsistent. So if you do want grouper and the weather actually does it a 180 to what it says it's going to do, you're going to be looking at 25 to 35 miles for your red grouper. But your yellowtail and mangrove snapper bite at 15 to 20 miles out offshore has been really incredible. You know, they're catching 3 to 5 pound yellowtail snapper out there and 4 to 6 pound mangrove snapper. So
that's as big as they get, basically.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much. So just take your time, watch the weather, and don't go out there if it's dangerous, and try to watch the weather this week and enjoy your holiday weekend as best you can and be safe, and we'll hopefully see you guys again next week.
And on behalf of all of us and Fish and Frank, who's somewhere in the middle of the country right now driving some big old RV, we'll see you all next week.